Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening this week and supporting public media. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Lots of news to get into this Friday. Coming up, we're going to talk about the end of the federal unemployment money and what that means for tens of thousands of you out there. Also, there's been an extension of that moratorium on evictions in the state. We want to hear from you right now. Have you been collecting unemployment? Are you worried about your benefits ending? What will losing that extra $600 a week mean for you and your household? Give us a call. It's 305-995-1800. Tweets to @FloridaRoundup.
But first, Hurricane Isaias. It is headed toward Florida, currently a Category 1 storm, and it's expected to strengthen in the hours and a day or so ahead. Now, it's forecast to just brush by Florida, mostly stay out at sea, but preparations are underway across the peninsula in case the storm heads a little bit west toward the state's east coast. Governor Ron DeSantis declared a state of emergency for all of Florida's east coast counties. Ray Hawthorne of the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network in Gainesville has an update for us here live as we're statewide noon on Florida Public Radio. Ray, let's go south to north, kind of follow the direction of the storm over the next couple of days. Tropical storm warnings have now been issued for Miami-Dade through the Treasure Coast. Hurricane Watch is a little bit further north from Palm Beach County up to the Space Coast. Talk to us about the timing and then the intensity of Isaias.
Hey there, Tom. Hey, Melissa. Yeah, the timing of the storm at the moment, the current position is about 300 miles southeast of Nassau in the Bahamas, and its motion is fairly quick toward the northwest at around 16 miles per hour. So it looks like the tropical storm force winds would likely get into parts of the Gold Coast and the Treasure Coast area coming up Saturday afternoon into Saturday evening. And then farther north along the coast, those tropical storm force winds are most likely to arrive on Saturday night up to the northern parts of the Treasure Coast toward Vero Beach and into the Space Coast area. And then depending on the exact track of the storm, the tropical storm force winds would then be heading for the first coast, northeast Florida, it looks like, sometime on Sunday. And, of course, there's always the possibility that hurricane force winds could be experienced along any part of the Florida coast within the hurricane watch area. It just depends on how close the center of the hurricane gets to land.
How big is this storm? Because as this thing was brewing out in the Caribbean, it was very disorganized and messy, but pretty large.
And it still is large, Tom. Yeah, the tropical storm force winds yesterday extended outward about 300 miles from the center. Now, the storm's a little bit more compact today. Those tropical storm force winds extend outward about 205 miles from the center. Hurricane force winds, winds of at least 74 miles per hour sustained or greater, extend out about 35 miles from the center. Now, it's important to note that there's some upper-level wind shear from the southwest. So The tropical storm force winds, yes, they do extend out 200 miles. However, the greatest extent of those winds are to the north and to the northeast of the center of circulation. So those that 200-mile radius of winds does not extend as far to the west. So okay. It's really, really important to get a sense of where the exact track is going to be as this approaches.
And that northeast quadrant of the storm, given the current forecast, that quadrant is likely to stay offshore of Florida's east coast, at least according to the National Hurricane Center forecast right now.
Yeah, it's going to be really, really close. Really close. And the margin for error
like
is
Matthew
not
close,
very great.
Ray? Like Matthew close or Dorian close?
Matthew close, and based on some of the latest forecast projections that have just come out within some of the forecast modeling, is suggesting extremely close, very close to a Matthew situation. So when you talk about a forecast here, even a wiggle or a wobble of 20 or 30 or 40 miles here makes a really big difference. Yeah. And it's really best to prepare for a reasonable worst case scenario, which would be a Category 1 or perhaps a Category 2 storm.
Ray, we've focused our comments and your forecast here on the east coast of Florida. We are statewide. How about conditions on the Gulf side of the peninsula?
Gulf side of the peninsula looks a lot better. As I mentioned a little bit earlier, the tropical storm and hurricane force winds are kind of weighted to the eastern side of the circulation. So unless there's a massive change in the forecast that we just don't see, well outside of the realm of possibility, it seems unlikely, quite unlikely, that we're looking at significant impacts on the Gulf Coast side. I can't completely rule out a squall, perhaps briefly, producing tropical storm force winds along the southwest coast of Florida, or perhaps the west central coast, but even that appears a little bit unlikely at this point. And areas from the Big Bend into the Panhandle area, impacts are going to be very insignificant or maybe none at all. It's just going to be another hot and steamy day that's typical of late July and early August.
Ray Hawthorne joining us here statewide. Ray is with the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network. You'll hear Ray and his colleagues on these Florida public radio stations in potentially the days ahead as Isaias continues to kind of churn and move toward the east coast of Florida. Ray, thanks for joining us here on the Roundup.
You're welcome, Tom.
Of course, Melissa, this is happening during a pandemic, and we should note that the state of Florida, which runs 162 COVID testing sites in 65 counties across the state, those are closed in anticipation of the storm.
That's right, Tom, and that should drive down positive numbers for COVID in the coming days. We'll continue to watch that. Meanwhile, tens of thousands of you out there are waiting to hear if your unemployment benefits will be saved next month. The $600 federal payments Americans have been getting as extra support in the pandemic have ended. And as yet, there is still no deal in sight in Washington to put together a new plan.
The Republican-led Senate adjourned Thursday for a long weekend with no action on COVID-19 relief. The $600 a week payment had been a financial lifeline for more than 20 million out-of-work Americans. On Thursday, we saw just how badly the pandemic hit the U.S. economy in the springtime. The nation's economy recorded its worst quarterly economic contraction ever. In the second quarter, it was breathtaking how fast and how deep the recession hit. Now, in the meantime, the national death toll from the virus continues increasing, topping 150,000. Florida has set a record 4 days in a row now for the number of people dying from COVID-19. In fact, more than half of those who have died from the virus in Florida since the beginning of the pandemic have died this month.
U.S. Representative Donna Shalala has been speaking out for weeks now about the need to extend those unemployment benefits. Shalala is a Democrat. She represents Florida's 27th congressional district in Miami-Dade. She's also the former U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services. Representative Shalala, glad to have you back on the show. Thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
And it's 305-995-1800 if you have questions about unemployment benefits. Tweets to @FloridaRoundup. We should note we did reach out to six of your Republican colleagues in the Florida congressional delegation to join us today. We either didn't hear back or they declined. Representative Shalala, is there any hope the Senate can come to terms on a new stimulus plan for the nation?
Well, you know, we passed the stimulus plan that we want them to consider, the HEROES Act, last May. So it's been 78 days since we actually passed unemployment insurance extended through next January, the $600 a week. And it's like waiting for Godot, the Samuel Beckett play in which Godot never shows up. I don't know why they adjourned. Because they really need to negotiate a plan with us. And frankly, their plan, I had to laugh out loud. What did they have in it? Extending the benefit for businesses to actually write off three-part martini lunches. They can now write off 50% on their taxes. They extended it to 100% on their taxes. And they wanted everybody to take a 30% cut in their unemployment benefits. I mean,
is that the main difference from Republican proposals for economic relief? There have been a number of proposals on the Republican side. They haven't come to an agreement on what they want to offer. But is that the big difference between what Democrats and Republicans are supporting?
Yeah, one is unemployment. Two is money for state and local government so they can continue to pay teachers and police officers and fire officers and they had nothing for any of that. We were close on providing money to the schools. We're not going to reopen the schools in South Florida, in much of Florida, until we get control over this virus. But we need to give the schools the money to start preparing, and they're going to have to make structural changes. But state and local unemployment is absolutely critical. Child care, we need to put more money into small businesses to make sure that they can survive. And, you know, it's I think their plan was a little less than $1 trillion. Ours is $3 trillion. I mean, we really make, it, with the economy and the state it is, we need to make substantial investments, and we cannot leave teachers to be laid off or police and fire in our communities to be laid off, or the other municipal workers that maintain health and safety in our community. We've got to get more money to hospitals, and we've got to get more money into testing. I mean, they're not even close to us at the moment. But we will negotiate over the next week, and we need to do it quickly because people have lost their unemployment benefits.
Certainly, time is of the essence. People are very worried about how they're going to pay rent, pay for groceries. Later in the hour, we'll talk about an extension of that moratorium on evictions in Florida. But do you think the two parties can come together? The Republicans on the Hill are arguing that the Democrats in Congress want to spend too much. They also say extending benefits at the level that have been paid out to date is just giving people a disincentive to go back to work. In other words, that some Americans out there can earn more by collecting the $600 payments than by going back to their jobs. What's your response to that argument?
There's little evidence of that. When people are ordered back by their employers, they have to go back, and they lose their benefits if they don't go back. The economists have found little evidence that this amount of money is keeping people from going back to work. Frankly, you can't go back to work when the pandemic is spreading all over Florida. It's not safe to go back to work. So we have to maintain people's income so that they don't starve. Since when in this country do we allow people to starve? Do we allow people to be evicted? We don't. And by the way, it's their money. It's your money. All I'm doing is voting to bring Florida's money back to Florida. It's not like it belongs to a set of Senate Republicans. It belongs to the people of our state, and we need to spend it on them.
Representative Shalala, stick with us. It's Tom Hudson here on the Florida Roundup with Melissa Ross. 305-995-1800 is the phone number, talking about the expiration of this $600 federal unemployment booster that was finished at the end of last week. House Republicans okayed their own new stimulus plan many weeks ago, and Republicans in the Senate proposed a plan that was about a third of the size earlier this week, but no vote as of yet. Let's begin the phone calls in Jacksonville, where Taya is on the line too. Taya, welcome to the Florida Roundup.
Yes, thank you for having me. I just find it funny that these Republicans think that anyone is not going back to work. It's ridiculous. We all want to go back to work. I worked in the hotel, and when this coronavirus happened, we got laid off immediately. And the unemployment, I don't know who's over the unemployment department, but they are not doing their job. People are not getting their checks. The weekly $600, a lot of people are saying they never got it, even when they kept reapplying for their benefits. So something else is going on. But the fact that they think people do not want to go to work is really ridiculous. And it really just shows how privileged that they are, that they don't understand what it means to be in the working class.
Tay, I appreciate that perspective there from Jacksonville. Let's go to Broward County, where Evan is on line one. Evan, let me try to bring you in here. Having a little bit of technical difficulty. If I can have my control room help me out on line one. Evan, you with us?
Hi, thanks for having me on your program.
Sure thing. Go ahead.
I had my second kid in October. We decided that we were going to move into a townhouse, and a big part of being able to move into a townhouse was this stimulus package that we got along with the unemployment. My wife was working at an invitation company, and, you know, they're done for a long time, much longer than other events. And so this $600 benefit that we get makes it so that she doesn't just have to go to work at some minimum wage job again. She can use the skills that she has to find a job that suits her and that she can, you know, be the most effective at.
Evan, appreciate that. Representative Shalala, respond to a couple of the callers there, Taya in Jacksonville and Evan in Broward County. What are the stakes?
Well, I think that we're talking about real people with real experiences that wouldn't be able to take care of their families. And it's disrespectful to assume that people don't want to go to work. Everybody that I know, that I talk to in my district, wants to go to work. It's unsafe at the moment in much of Florida to go to work. And all this money is doing is allowing people to stay in their own home and to feed their family. What more fundamental responsibility is there in government than doing that in a crisis?
Joe in Jacksonville tweets the show, the governor should be worried about the state's economy. If we lose unemployment, entire industries are out of work or unemployed. And if those affected through no fault of their own can't maintain their obligations, entire markets crash. He says it's a domino effect. Lots of feedback coming into the Florida Roundup. It's 305-995-1800 to join us. Scott is in Vero Beach right now. Hey, Scott. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks. No, thanks for taking my question slash comment. And I want to start off by saying thank everyone for participating, and I agree. We absolutely have to support the people that are not in a position to go back to work because it's dangerous and this is a serious pandemic. However, Representative, the comment you made about you not knowing of anyone who is not incentivized or is being incentivized to not go back to work, I'm going to give you some real-time things that are happening here in my part of the state. This $875 a week is actually what, you know, I have a construction company, and that's a lot about what people make here. And we work out in 92-degree weather, and these guys are busting their hump for the same thing that people are getting paid to stay home. And I have had a help wanted sign in front of my place on US 1 with 20,000 cars passing a day. I've had one person stop in the last 2.5 months to apply for a job, and they weren't legal. So it is disincentivizing people. And the person across the street who's got a auto mechanic place was looking for a counter person. They had two people come in for interviews, and they said, okay, well how much do you guys pay? Because we're getting $875 a week to stay home, and it better be a lot more than that to get me to come into work.
All right, so Scott. And Scott, I hear you. I didn't mean to cut you off, but we are coming up against a break. And I know, Representative Shalala, you probably want a little time to answer that question. So I want everyone to hold that thought as we continue taking your calls about unemployment in Florida. Let us know your situation. 305-995-1800. Tweets to @FloridaRoundup. How's your budget? Are you concerned about the loss of that $600 benefit? Maybe you're an employer like Scott and you have another point of view about how this is playing out. We want to hear from the whole state right now. 305-995-1800 as we will continue the conversation with U.S. Representative Donna Shalala right after this break. This situation affects so many of you. Now is your time to connect with us here on the Florida Roundup. A quick break and more to come. This is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Back in a moment. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for being with us this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. We're talking about the expiration of the federal $600 a week boost in unemployment that was put in place because of the pandemic and the efforts to slow the spread of coronavirus. That extra payment expired at the end of last week for Floridians. The Florida Democratic Representative Donna Shalala is still with us, representing Florida's 27th congressional district in South Florida. Representative Shalala, just before the break, you heard from Scott, a construction company owner in Vero Beach, saying he's having trouble bringing workers back, hiring new workers, saying that the $600 a week federal boost plus the maximum $275 a week in state unemployment benefits at $875 a week to stay at home, to stay off work. It's tough to find workers to come back into the workplace.
Well, let me say that the construction industry before the pandemic was having trouble recruiting workers. Some of that has to do with the level of pay. $800 a month, a week, added up.
It's about $45,000 a year.
Exactly, which is barely $15 an hour, I think, without benefits. So that the industry itself was having trouble before the pandemic because of relatively low wages. If he had employees before the pandemic and he asked them to come back and they said to him, no, I'm making more on unemployment, they have to come back or they're going to lose their unemployment. That's the rule. So I don't know what his situation was before the pandemic, but his former workers would have to come back under the rules if their employer asked them to come back, because unemployment would not continue. Look, I'm not denying there aren't cases in tight markets where people won't come back because they were making, because they're getting more than the minimum wage, but supporting a family on $45,000 a year in South Florida is not easy. And all we're trying to do is to keep people whole, somewhat whole, at least at the minimum, so that we don't have evictions, we don't have starvation, and we don't have people getting sick because they have to go to work in high-risk situations. But I'm not denying there aren't industries where the market is very tight and where people will not go back because they don't pay more than $15 an hour.
And Representative Shalala, whether you're coming from that point of view of someone trying to hire employees or whether you're an employee who is really worried about how you're going to keep body and soul together, what can we expect from Congress in the next week to try to figure out a solution?
Well, Congress will negotiate in the next week and try to put a package together. We know what we want. We put a package on the table, a serious package to maintain. And by the way, the Fed agrees with us. Jerome Powell, the head of the Federal Reserve, said, you really have to make a deep investment right now to maintain the economy. We put that plan on the table, and over the next week there will be serious negotiations.
And time is of the essence, so, you know, would there be an answer by Monday, by Tuesday? This is, for every day that goes by, more people are, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say, at risk of...
Absolutely. They're at risk. And at least my party understands that. The Republicans are in disarray on the Senate side. They can't agree on their own package. And the president said don't take the package seriously. So we're going to have to reach agreement. Cooler heads are going to have to resolve this, and meanwhile, the American people are at risk, large numbers of workers, people who want to go to work. If you look at the census tracts in South Florida as to who's getting the disease, it's actually people in the lowest income areas, mm-hmm. who have gone to work and have brought back the virus to their family.
Congresswoman Donna Shalala, along with this congresswoman for the District 27 in South Florida, former Health and Human Services Secretary as well. Congresswoman, thanks for your time today on the Roundup. Nice to talk to you again.
You're welcome. You know, this is a very serious, very critical period.
Yes.
And we'll see who has the courage to step up. But I can't emphasize enough, it's our money.
Congresswoman, it's... Certainly, it is U.S. taxpayer money, and it is debt that is backed by U.S. taxpayers today and tomorrow. Taxpayers. We should note that we did offer a conversation with a half dozen Florida Republicans from the delegation, and they either did not get back to us or turned our invitation down.
Well, as the unemployment matter remains in limbo, here is a bit of good news. If you're out there having trouble, worried about how you're going to pay your rent or your mortgage, you will not be evicted or foreclosed on in August. This week, Governor DeSantis extended his executive order pausing evictions and foreclosures. Now, they had been on hold since April as the state shut down to slow the spread of coronavirus. But even as parts of the state partially reopened, the job market remained weak. And as we've been talking about, those federal $600 unemployment booster payments, for now anyway, have come to an end.
And, you know, even before the pandemic, parts of Florida were experiencing a severe housing affordability crisis fueled by the high cost of homes and the low average incomes in the Sunshine State. So have you skipped paying rent or a mortgage payment because of COVID-19? Please share your experience with us. Are you a landlord maybe who has had a tenant unable to pay rent? What's that been like? How are you speaking to one another? And what could housing look like after the pandemic if evictions and foreclosures spike? 305-995-1800. The phone line's open now. 305-995-1800 or at Florida Roundup on Twitter. Larry Thatcher is along with us, Deputy and Pro Bono Director of Legal Aid Society of Orange County Bar Association. Larry, welcome to the Roundup. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
You are speaking to us via Skype, we should note. What's the practical impact of the moratorium on evictions for renters?
Well, the practical impact is that if you're a residential tenant and you face economic loss due to COVID-19, that is keeping you from making your rental payments, you, through the moratorium, you can know that you will not be put out of the rental property throughout the next month for non-payment of rent alone.
And is there proof of the economic situation that's necessary in order to fall under the protection of the moratorium?
Well, there's nothing specific that I have seen that says you have to have proof. But I will tell you that that is what we are advising clients to do and tenants is, and here's the thing, it's just for all practical purposes, proof is always better. So we are telling folks, yes, document when you lost your job, document what efforts you have made to find resources or apply for some of the resources that are out there. Document the efforts that you have done to apply for unemployment comp and where are you at with that. So we definitely think having proof would go a long way.
Let's bring in one of your colleagues to our conversation. Camilo Parra is a housing attorney with the Legal Aid Society of the Orange County Bar Association. Camilo, thanks for joining us here. What kind of documents are people being requested to kind of collect to be able to have?
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me. So at this time, we're not sure what's being requested because nothing in specific is being requested, but we're certainly advising everyone to keep track of anything you can show, showing you've lost your employment. There's a drop in your income, your wages, perhaps health expenses that you have had to pay for during this time. Anything that you can show that you are adversely impacted by COVID-19, and that is the reason why you are unable to make your rental payments.
And is the suggestion that as a renter, you've got those documents each and every month to communicate that to the landlord?
I would certainly start now. If you haven't had the opportunity to start collecting those documents yet, start now as soon as you possibly can. Continue to keep track. For example, if you're sending out applications and you can hold on to those applications for assistance, hold on to them. If you have emails showing that you are in the process, keep them. If that's unavailable, at least maybe try to keep like a journal or some sort of private log of when you're doing what to try to actually make your rent payments and just have it handy.
Document. Yeah.
To show it.
It's 305-995-1800 as we talk about another extension of a moratorium on evictions in Florida. That moratorium extends to foreclosures, too, for the next month. What that means is even if you can't pay the rent or the mortgage for August, you will stay housed for now. It's a big, big concern for so many of you out there. So we want to hear from you. Let us know your situation. 305-995-1800. Steve is on the line from Jacksonville. Steve, you're a landlord, is that right?
Yes, I've been a landlord for 40 years.
Okay, so what are your thoughts about all of this and what this means for you?
Well, to be the easiest solution right now is, rather than sending out more checks, is to send out a voucher. I would be thrilled to accept a voucher for half. If you said, look, send out 4 months, you know, 2 months rent, and it has to cover 4 months from the government, I would accept that.
You'd
but
accept
because
that?
Because you, yeah, I would be happy with that. Because these evictions have been put off and put off, at the end of the day, people, they know they don't have to pay the rent. So I'm going to, at some point, I'm going to have to evict good people because they've thought, he can't, his hands are tied.
But you'd rather not evict those tenants, it sounds to me.
Oh, absolutely. But at this point, they're going to be so far behind that when it comes to paying, they're never going to be able to make it up.
Right, right.
You've got to let them go. So if the government said, we'll give you a voucher for 50% for the next 4 months, fine. Maybe that'll get us out of this nightmare.
Steve, thanks for that.
But just say, hey, you've got to continue to provide maintenance and repairs and... And
that's
not
too much.
Anything?
Yeah, too much. Yeah. All right. Camilo, from the perspective of a landlord, this month-to-month situation isn't tenable for someone like Steve, really, any more than it is for renters who are kept hanging month-to-month. What should the state do to put together a more comprehensive plan to address housing? Should they be looking at the kind of vouchers he referenced?
I'll be honest with you. That's not what I went to school for. I'm not quite in a position to tell you what could or couldn't work. One thing I do want to point out, though, is that this current eviction moratorium, the governor's order, and also the CARES Act, the federal moratorium, both of them are very clear in their language that nothing within those orders should be construed to suspend or otherwise affect the contractual obligation to actually make these rental payments once you're able to make them. These landlords should be able to thereafter, you know, go through the legal recourses to collect the unpaid rent.
Can I add something,
Larry,
here, too?
Larry, your thoughts.
And I will tell you, we have seen a lot of, we know that we're all in this together. Landlords are hurting, tenants are hurting. And we have seen some incredible acts of kindness on landlords' part. And for, like Steve, we love that a landlord would say, I'd be willing to take half the money. And so I do think that while we're not prepared to tell you exactly what kind of a plan might work here, I definitely think, yes, it would behoove us as a state to start putting some thought into it, asking landlords, are you willing to accept less than the full amount in order to not file the eviction? And how can we get those resources to the landlords? If we can get the rent paid, both the tenant and the landlord win. So I agree. Those are some fabulous suggestions. And you got to give kudos to a landlord like Steve, who's willing to make some concessions.
Yes, and we want to keep hearing from you out there, whether you're a landlord or a tenant. This is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio.
305-995-1800 is the phone number. Larry Thatcher is one of our guests, Deputy and Pro Bono Director, Legal Aid Society of Orange County Bar Association. Her colleague, Camila Parra, is a housing attorney for that association, and we will take more of your phone calls in a moment. I want to follow up, though, on this idea of solutions at the end of the pandemic, or if this eviction and foreclosure moratorium does wind up expiring in the months ahead. As the governor renewed that moratorium this week through the end of August, there was one sentence added at the end of the moratorium, almost at the end of the moratorium. The sentence was, all payments, including tolled payments, are due when an individual is no longer adversely affected by the COVID-19 emergency. Larry, that sounds to me, as a journalist, that once this moratorium expires, all back rent and back mortgage payments are due. Is that fair? Is that a fair reading and understanding of this?
Well, I'm an attorney. And sometimes I think that I'm not exactly sure. I just saw this in the last day or so that the language was added. And so I'm not exactly sure what the intent was there. But I think there's an argument to be made that after the pandemic is over, or certainly after the moratorium is lifted, not necessarily the pandemic, but the moratorium is lifted, I think there's an argument that people are still adversely affected if they were laid off, let go, and they still have not found new jobs or the means to pay the rent in full. So, yeah, I mean, I think, though, the intent, I do want to say the intent out there, most, if not all, of the tenants who have reached out to us want to pay their rent. In fact, I would tell you that most of the tenants who've contacted us are making some sort of partial payments. They're paying as much as they can. I have not had a tenant yet tell me, I know I don't have to pay, so I'm not going to pay. So I do think that there's a lot left out there that remains to be seen. What does the language mean and how will it in practicality work? But I will tell you that every day we've got tenants, they know they got to pay, they need to pay, they're making every attempt they can to pay what they can, and they're looking up all the resources available to them.
We've been focusing on renters, but this also includes homeowners with mortgages as it puts a moratorium
and
on the potential of mortgage foreclosures.
We heard that guy in Jacksonville, the landlord, Steve, say he knows that they have to pay it all back and that when they can't, he has to reluctantly, I'm quoting his comments, reluctantly evict them if they can't pay all that back. And he knows they a lot of his tenants won't be able to under these current regulations. So it's a tough
Florida
situation.
Florida certainly has some experience in dealing with a crush of foreclosures just 12, 13, 14 years ago during the height of the housing crisis. We'll talk a little bit more about that as the Florida Roundup is going to continue. Your experiences, able to make a month's rent, a landlord, your experience dealing with renters who have been affected by COVID-19 and the loss of jobs. 800-743. No, it's not the 800 number. It's the 305 number, 305-995-1800. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. As we continue talking about Florida's extension of a moratorium on evictions, the governor just extended that for August. So if you are unable to pay your rent or mortgage, you cannot be evicted for the next month. Because we continue to struggle in this pandemic, most of us, people are out of work, many of you out there, particularly in Florida's service-driven economy. We want to hear from you. It's 305-995-1800 as we continue on discussing all the issues with the top executives of the Legal Aid Society of the Orange County Bar. 305-995-1800. Lynn is in Orlando. Lynn, are you a landlord, I take it? Is that right?
This is Lynn.
Hi, go ahead.
Yes, I am an owner investor. I own a condominium in downtown Orlando, and I fund my mortgage on my home by the net rent provided through a management company on site that is a national management company. Same tenant, net rent is paid through the same bank, no changes. And suddenly it is showing, their statements show that I have received when I have not received any rent. And first they claimed to the bank, their bank had messed up. But I feel like I'm, and now they're saying I received it and I did not. So I'm having to then evidence a non-payment. I feel like I'm getting in the middle of an eviction management situation that's impacting me personally because I just retired this year. Mm. And the whole idea of this breaking down when I have a great long-term tenant who loves the unit, and that's wonderful for now. The fact that now the management company is somehow too busy or confusing their records, it's real problematic for me.
Sure. So you're worried about paying your own mortgage, obviously. All right. Well, Lynn, I thank you for that. That's Lynn in Orlando calling in. Larry Thatcher, Legal Aid Society in Orange County of the Bar Association there. this shows you the complexities of this problem, doesn't it? People are affected in all kinds of ways, and it's going to be difficult for the state to come up with a solution, a comprehensive strategy to deal with this.
I definitely agree. It definitely shows this is a comprehensive problem. It's definitely, again, the tenants are hurting, the landlords are hurting. We're all in this together. I do think it's going to take some comprehensive solutions, but I also do believe that we will get there and we can get there. I go back to the prior landlord, Steve, and his call-in, and when he said he's willing to take less than the full amount of rent because he knows he's got good tenants and he doesn't want to evict. And I believe there are many more landlords out there that would be willing to resolve this matter in ways other than just evicting the tenants.
But I think what's important about Steve's situation, Larry, is he talked about receiving a voucher. He didn't talk necessarily about receiving less money directly from the renter, but some kind of government voucher program, for instance. Talk to us a little bit about that landlord, renter, or homeowner banker conversation, just dealing with this kind of in a one-on-one relationship as opposed to some other government program that may be put in place to try to address the financial hole that landlords and renters have found themselves in.
Sure. And actually, I will tell you, that's actually the advice we have been giving tenants that have reached out to us. We tell them, save whatever money you can, but communicate with your landlord. Go ahead and affirmatively let your landlord know if you have lost your job or you've been adversely affected, that you're going to get behind in your rent. We've asked them to reach out to their landlords and talk to them about payment plans, offering what they can in exchange for the landlord promising not to evict. We have been steering them towards the local resources and asking them to search out other resources. And so I agree that we, that's...
Should you get it in writing, Larry?
Absolutely. You absolutely want everything in writing.
Vicki in Hollywood has an interesting question here for us, Larry. Go ahead, Vicki.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I'm curious. There's a lot of information in this moratorium to navigate, and I saw that for renters, if a property is owned outright by an LLC and is not backed by a federal mortgage, that the moratorium does not apply. Is that correct?
Larry, Camilo, what do you think? If it's not a federally backed guarantee mortgage for an apartment, for instance, does the moratorium apply or not?
The governor's order certainly does.
So blanket moratorium, right? It applies to everywhere.
That is correct.
You cannot be evicted for the month of August, no matter where what kind of roof is over your head.
The confusion there is that there are two moratoriums in play.
Let me ask you, Camilo, as a follow-up to something Tom touched on. We saw at the height of the foreclosure crisis in Florida, the Rocket Docket, where people were foreclosed on in the courts in rapid fashion. There were so many that were processed through the system. It was controversial at the time. We have a new housing crisis now upon us in Florida, and they had to bring back a lot of retired judges for these Rocket Dockets, and that received unwanted national attention. Is the court system even set up to handle what could be a rush of foreclosures and other related legal matters that could be coming from this crisis at some point?
So this is certainly an evolving issue, and the courts have been taking every step they can, moving along with the pandemic itself as it has been developing to try and address this issue. We do know that once this moratorium is lifted, if people are still out of work, they're still unable to reach payment plans, we do expect to have a homelessness crisis on our hands. We also expect there to be a lot of empty rental units, as it may be difficult for landlords to fill all these vacancies with everybody hurting economically right now. It's certainly an issue that we're going to have to just face all together. We can't view this as a one-sided issue. This is everyone's really hurting right now.
You are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Miss Allen in Orlando is joining us with her own particular situation. Go ahead, Miss Allen. You're on the radio.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I'm an out-of-work tenant. from the airline industry, and my apartment community owns several thousand apartment complexes around the country. So what they're saying they're doing is not renewing any leases. So if your lease is up for renewal during the pandemic, they're not going to renew. So when the moratorium is lifted, you will not only be evicted for non-payment of rent immediately, but for not having a renewed lease. So therefore, contractually, they can evict you, not for non-payment, but for not renewing the lease. So do you have any answers related to that?
Camila Parra with the Legal Aid Society of Orange County Bar Association.
I'll tell you, it's certainly a concern. There are multiple reasons that a tenant could be evicted. The governor's order and the CARES Act both do only specifically address non-payment related to COVID-19. Other forms of evictions, how they will proceed, when they will proceed, I'm uncertain as to that. But
does the moratorium only? Sorry for the interruption, Camilo. Does the moratorium only affect those with a written lease? So, in other words, if you're just living in an apartment on a handshake deal, does the moratorium apply?
It certainly applies in that you cannot be evicted for non-payment alone. But there is the question of if you're being evicted for another reason, how will the courts handle this?
You know, Larry.
Larry.
Only a couple minutes left in the show. Could you sum all this up for all of our listeners? We're in this month-to-month situation. The governor, you know, makes a decision at the end of each month whether to extend the moratorium or not. Does he need to take a more comprehensive approach? Right now, we're in a month-to-month. No lease. It's like renting an apartment month to month without a lease for the whole state. What do you think the governor should do as this drags on?
I would love to see the governor convene a task force to talk about what options are there for getting landlords paid so that tenants don't get evicted, landlords get paid, and then that's a win-win for everybody. And I think there certainly should be some a task force, and there's got to be some folks out there with the expertise to figure out that comprehensive plan. How do we get resources in the hands of the landlords, but also not get the tenants evicted?
A comprehensive plan for everyone, and then also something to forestall what Camilo said, which could be a really serious crisis of homelessness in this state, too, right?
Correct. Because I think all these folks that are out there that are out of work, if the evictions start flowing through, we already, I think, as you mentioned earlier, had an affordability crisis here in the state and particularly in the Central Florida area. And I don't know that there's going to be affordable places for anyone who's currently being evicted to go to.
Camilo, for those who are looking at the 1st of August, know that they have this moratorium in place and are now looking to September 1st. What's your advice to those who are still struggling with income and concerned about what September, October may look like for rental payments or mortgage payments?
So there's a number of things they could be doing. Definitely save money to begin with. Communicate. Communicate with your landlord. Communicate with your mortgage servicer. Seek payment plans when available. Offer to pay what you can in exchange for a written promise not to evict. Seek out all the resources available. Reach out to churches, family members. Take collection of all the documents you need to show that you are impacted by the crisis itself. As far as landlords go, they should also be trying to reach out to the tenants and seeing if they can work something out. Landlords should refrain from engaging in prohibited practices.
Camilo Parra is a housing attorney with Legal Aid Society or the Orange County Bar Association. We've got to run, Camilo, but thanks for your time. Larry Thatcher is the pro bono director of the Legal Aid Society in Orange County. Larry and Camilo, thank you for joining us here on the Florida Roundup.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you both. That's our show as we do an abbreviated close. I'm Melissa Ross, and the Florida Roundup is produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Heather Schatz and Denise Royal are producers.
Jason Zapka is the Director of Radio Programming, Director of Radio Operations at WLRN, and our Technical Director is Peter Meritz. Alexander Gonzalez answers the phones. Engineering help from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, and Josh Torres. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.